Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting from our studios, New York City. I'd like to welcome you from all over the world, because we have people listening from everywhere. Today, we're going to talk about how the bacteria in our gut, if it's the good bacteria, can help decrease strokes. This is a research from Memorial Sloan Kettering. Then, from the BBC Health, men who eat soy can have a lower risk of lung cancer. Also today, the chaga tea, C-H-A-G-A, chaga, powerful weapon against cancer, lots of research on it, and common antibiotics, the type most people use every day, without being told the problems. Well, new research from Harvard Medical School, they can cause delirium and brain disorders. Then we're going to take a look at an issue that doesn't get attention, and that is the rise of the major corporate players. These are the international bankers, business individuals, who decide that they have a right based upon their power, prestige, their position within a society to make our rules. They're not elected. And I'll share some information specifically from Susan George and her new book called Shadow Sovereigns, How Global Corporations Are Seizing Power. I have my own thoughts on that as well, and I've done a commentary. I'll share that. Also, from our environmental segment today, we'll talk about how many U.S. cities now have complete water systems that are in violation of the law, poisoning millions of Americans. What to do? And the Obama administration approved Gulf fracking during Deepwater Horizon, something you didn't know, and I'll share with you. And also, the Obama administration has done really well. They get an A-plus when it comes to helping America's weapons makers. How so? Well, according to Byron Schatz from Mother Jones, $200 billion in international arms deals in just the last 7 years, more than any president in American history. What's wrong with that? I'll explain. Haiti. We're all familiar with the big earthquake that happened down there and how much suffering it caused to the Haitian people. But what we don't know is what happened to the billions of dollars that were promised. We found out. And we'll be reporting a study from Bill Quigley and Anna Ramiskauskas from Alternet, who are going to share some startling figures. Also, when you travel to some of the architecturally beautiful cities in the world, such as Qatar and Dubai, you look at these buildings, you look at the city, and you think, wow, serious money went into this, and some of the best creative minds in the world put it together. That is true. What you don't see anywhere around the world, you don't see the 46 million modern-day slaves that are responsible for doing the actual building. I'll talk about modern-day slavery from a report from Common Dreams. Plus today, from our audio files, we're going to listen to a person talk about what it means to be a patriot, because I'm listening to people talk about patriotism. And, well, I think that they have their own specific version of patriotism, but I like this one, and we'll share it. As you see, we have a lot to share, so let's begin. First up, we're going to take a look at a study out of Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York City, and here's what it says. Certain types of bacteria in your gut can leverage the immune system to decrease the severity of a stroke, according to new research from the Weill Cornell Medicine. And the finding can help mitigate stroke, which is the second leading cause of death worldwide. It was published in Natural Medicine. So here's the takeaway message. Anytime we do anything there's going to be a consequence. Whether we intend that consequences or not, we're going to have a consequence. And that's why I ask people to start considering a concept of intentional selection, meaning whatever you do in life, from the most minor thing to the major thing, do it with intent. I'll give you an example. I once took my brothers and we went down to the Caribbean for a little holiday, and then we were going on to study aloe plantations down there and see, are they good or not? Turns out they were terrible, using all kinds of toxic sprays. And so people weren't aware of how bad the aloe that was coming in from the Dominican Republic was. But in any case, on the way, we stopped off in some other countries. I wanted to see their health and what people, the average person, was doing to maintain their health. Interviewed a lot of bush doctors. But then there was a day where I just laid in a hammock. So they wanted to go, you know, all these other places, take all these pictures. I said, no, I'm just going to lay in a hammock. Why? Well, because that's what I want to do. I just want to rest. I want to look out at the ocean, feel the breeze, and lay in a hammock. And they had a hard time with that because, gee whiz, you're in a beautiful environment. Go enjoy all that you can, see all you can, speak with as many people. No. It's the idea of intent. Yesterday when I had a huge glass of wheatgrass juice with ginger in it, and though I didn't like the taste, I had an intent. I know that drinking wheatgrass with ginger stimulates natural cells, the type of cells that we want stimulated to grow new and stronger and healthier stem cells. Your body's own stem cells are actually rejuvenated when you have wheatgrass juice. Most people are not aware of that. So that's why I suggested to people with cancers and people with leukemias. It makes a big difference. It's intent. That means that what you're doing has a function. Hence, a food is a functional food. So if you're going to have a glass of grapefruit juice or eat a grapefruit, it's a functional food, meaning it's going to function in your body. The white inside peel is loaded with bioflavonoids, and that can help stronger and healthier skin, create new collagen. It can help heal bruises better, quicker, faster, helps your hair. So it's a functional food, just like all the superfoods are functional foods. That's why they're superfoods. They can do many different things. But the same is true with bacteria. If I choose to eat some sauerkraut in a salad or stuff some sauerkraut with pine nuts into an avocado, it's functional. The avocado is functional. I'm getting fatty acids and very healthy fatty acids. But I'm also, in the sauerkraut, getting probiotics. Now, those are two really important functional foods. Eaten with intent, and then I get good bacteria in my gut, which then helps prevent a stroke. Helps you send good messages, positive messages, about your immune capacity to the other parts of your body. Cells communicate. Bacteria communicate. And just remember, you have 100 times more bacteria in your body than you have cells. So if you have, let's say, 75 trillion cells, then you've got 10 times that in bacteria. So good bacteria, good cells, good health, good immune response. Bad bacteria, sugar, bad bacteria. Fried foods, french fries, pizza, hot dogs, hamburgers, cookies, bagels, donuts, muffins, ice cream, bad bacteria. Now, you may like those foods, but they're not going to like you in return. So that's what that study showed. Now, separately, we should be eating non-genetically engineered soy because it's the one that will really make a difference and it can help us. How so? Well, according to this study that was reported by the BBC Health, men who do not smoke but eat lots of soy can have a lower risk of lung cancer. Why? What's in soy that makes it so good? I'm referring to non-GMO food, soy, organic soy. Isoflavonoids, or isoflavones, they act similarly to the hormone estrogen, and that will give them an anti-cancer quality, and especially in the hormone-related cancers of the breast and prostate. How are you more likely to have breast cancer and prostate cancer? Simple. Eat meat. Meat drives estrogen. and that is a big problem. Be overweight, that drives estrogen, and be stressed, that drives estrogen. Well, how many people do you know are overweight, stressed because they're overweight, and then get on a high-protein diet to help with their overweight? That's three different sources of estrogen driving. That can increase your risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer. See, cells in the lung have properties that suggest they may also respond to isoflavones. And they studied 36,000 men, 40,000 women, and that's what they came up with. They studied them for 11 years and found out that those who had the highest quantity of soy had the most protection. And that's terrific. And that was done at the Okinawa Institute for Science Technology. Now, also, according to the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, there are age-related changes in 14 compounds produced in the body during metabolism. So what this means in lay language is that when you're eating plant-based walnuts, string beans, arugula, any of the legumes, when you're eating these, when these are breaking down, they're breaking down in ways that are quick, where you're releasing antioxidants and you're allowing the body to have natural sugars gradually so you don't spike your blood sugar. You're giving amino acids to help get into your muscles and give you muscle strength. You have antioxidants that are protecting your body. And all of these are important for good kidney and liver function. So once again, a plant-based diet makes all the difference in the world. And a new study showed that there are at least 20 bioactive compounds found in changa mushrooms, C-H-A-G-A, and some of them were active against cancer. And remember that mushrooms are funguses, and they all do different things inside the body, and that's why you should have a variety of them. And some of these live on the trunks of a mature birch tree. And it's wonderful if you ever go out into nature and you start looking at all the different... Don't do this if you're not experienced, because you end up getting either a magic mushroom and your brain will explode, or you end up tripping and jumping off a cliff. So don't ever assume, because you think you know what a mushroom is, that it's correct. A lot of mushrooms that are toxic look like mushrooms, white cap mushrooms, and shiitake mushrooms, maitake, that are not. But if you have an experienced person and they know what to look for, you can get yourself some great mushrooms. And this is just one, and it's really good for you, and it can prevent cancer. So that's what this says. Quote, in a 48-patient human clinical trial, 10 patients were treated with chaga, showing a reduction of tumor size, a decrease in pain, a decrease in the intensity and frequency of hemorrhaging, and a recovery accompanied by better sleep, appetite, and feelings of improvement. Most of these patients were females treated with chaga for cancer and the breast and the ovaries. So now there's a lot more studies on this. I mean, a whole lot of studies showing that it works. Just wanted to give you a heads up, get ahead of it. From Harvard Medical School, common antibiotics found to cause delirium and other brain disorders. So if you thought antibiotic resistance or destruction of healthy gut bacteria from antibiotics were reasons enough to avoid the use of antibiotics, and I know the people in this audience try at all costs to avoid them unless you absolutely need them, then you're going to have to use them. Well, you're right to avoid them. But in case you are still sitting on the fence when it comes to using these widely prescribed drugs, add side effects of delirium and brain disorders to reasons to avoid antibiotic use, especially antibiotic use for a cold or flu, because those are viral, and antibiotics are not going to work against viruses. Those are just wasted and destroy your good bacteria. That's what they found at Brigham and Women's Hospital. They reviewed 70 years of medical records and found out cases in all these patients who developed delirium and other brain problems after being given antibiotics. So, one more reason to say no to those antibiotics. There are other reasons, but that's a good one. And that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a quick break and come back. Please stay with us. Everyone, I'm Gary Noll. We have a lot to share. The latest report from the environment, from the Free Thought Project, a shocking report: over 5,300 U.S. water systems are in violation of the law, poisoning millions. According to this brand new report, some minimally 18 million Americans, quote, live in communities where the water systems are in violation of the law. So forget Flint. That's just a nefarious iceberg. And lead is not the only contaminant polluting drinking water for millions in the United States. And so what's being done about it? How about absolutely positively nothing? What could they do? Well, they could start by making sure that the water is ozonated. That would get rid of an awful lot of contaminants that normal water systems don't get rid of. And the second is to have community oversight, and on those community oversight boards, to put some healthcare professionals. Generally, you'll have a university in every town in America almost. So put some academics who have a background in the bacteriology, in water systems, so they can give an informed report to the citizens. Otherwise, you're dealing frequently with politics where people don't want to look bad, or people are told, you know, don't do something, don't release something, and so we don't get the truth. So we're drinking a lot of polluted water, but this isn't just polluted. This is water that's so polluted that it's actually against the law what they're doing, and yet no one will be held accountable. And according to this, there's over 1,000 communities in the United States that exceeded actionable lead levels set forth by the EPA. Over 1,000. So what they have to do, A, they have to go to deeper aquifers. And because at your shallow aquifers, they frequently have higher heavy metal content, go down 800,000 feet. And that's generally where you get the deep aquifer pools, and those are where I would start. I would also test water more regularly, and then I would, until you can get a big commercial ozone system that will kill almost everything, then you should start giving filters to community residents. And you don't have to get one of the very, very expensive filters, but you can still get a good quality filter. And if you bought them in quantity and took the profit motive out of them, so that these are, in effect, gifts to the community, we could help a lot of people, especially kids, prevent that buildup. Talking about pollution, this is a special report from Mike Ludwig of Truthout. Quote, hydraulic fracturing or fracking technology has been widely used to maximize oil and gas production in the Gulf of Mexico in recent years. And the government allows offshore drillers to dump fracking chemicals mixed with wastewater directly into the Gulf. I didn't know that. That's according to documents released to Truthout and the Center for Biological Diversity under the Freedom of Information Act. For example, from 2010 to 2014, the Obama administration approved more than 1,500 permit applications for offshore drilling plans that included fracking at hundreds of wells across the Gulf of Mexico. And during this time, regulators issued more than 300 categorical exclusions to exempt drilling plans that included fracking from complex environmental reviews, meaning we, the people, don't have any right to see what they're actually dumping, and they have the right to go ahead and dump it right into this with no scrutiny at all. So when the media learned that British Petroleum's drilling plan for the Deepwater Horizon rig was categorically excluded from review in the months before the deadly explosion on the platform caused the worst oil spill in U.S. history, and federal records show that regulators approved several drilling plans involving fracking in the Gulf of Mexico, even as the Deepwater Horizon disaster unfolded and oil from the broken well spewed into the Gulf for weeks on end. Quote, this is from their report, the Deepwater Horizon disaster should have been a wake-up call that we need to move away from offshore drilling. But now the federal government is rubber-stamping practices like fracking without doing any environmental review or notifying the public or local community, and it's just another disaster waiting to happen. So once again, they say they care about the environment, they care about our commons, our parks, our forests, the Gulf of Mexico. They don't. So when we weren't looking, they allowed all these exclusionary drilling practices where we're not told what they're doing, we're not shown what they're doing, and they're not held accountable for dumping their stuff right in the Gulf of Mexico. So you should know that. Also, a couple reports, and I'd like your feedback. This is our talk back. You can select which one you want to deal with. The first is this. I found a report that's current, and it's from the National Center for Health Statistics. This is a major study. How many Americans do you think per 100,000 commit a crime or a homicide, kill someone, in a year? It's 5.1 Americans per 100,000 in the latest year they have. That's serious. Now, how many Americans kill themselves each year? 13 deaths per 100,000, more than twice that are killed by all guns, kill themselves. So what we have is we have 40,000 Americans each year taking their own life in all age groups, from teenagers up to age 75. Why? I have some ideas why people are killing themselves and what we should be doing to help them, but I'd like you to respond. Did you know that 40,000 Americans have killed themselves? Did you know that we've had 125,000 American soldiers kill themselves, more than have died in the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts? There's no talk about it, nothing being done. But I want to hear your report, your input, before I give you mine. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. That's one topic. Now, here's the second topic. And this is from Common Dreams. When we look at some of the marvels of architecture and some of the great cities around the world, what we're not seeing is the labor that builds it. I have friends that lived in Dubai and Abu Dhabi and some other places in the Middle East, and they will tell you, early in the morning, the trucks bring in from these, in effect, internment camps, because people are not allowed to leave. Their passports and driver's license are confiscated. They're kept dozens into a shedded room. They suffer from dehydration, malnutrition, and these are among the rich states. They could afford to pay them. They choose not to. Instead, they bring them in, you have to work. Now, you ask the average person, one of the hottest places in the world is in the desert area of the Middle East. They're out there working all day long. There's no protection for them. Lots of them die. They fall off these skyscrapers, they fall off. They get hit with building materials. They die of stroke, heat stroke, very common, even malnutrition. And yet there's, how many are there? 46 million modern-day slaves. That's how many there are. That's according to the latest report on this. Quote from the report from Common Dreams, the low-cost labor that produces consumer goods for markets in Western Europe, Japan, North America, and Australia. The 2016 Global Slavery Index, based upon 42,000 interviews, conducted in 53 languages, covering 44% of the global population, found that there were 28% more modern slaves than previously estimated. Quote, modern slavery refers to situations of exploitation that a person cannot refuse or leave because of threats, violence, coercion, abuse of power, or deception, with treatment akin to a farm animal, end quote. And that's human trafficking, forced labor, debt bondage, sex trafficking, forced marriages, and other exploitation. And the biggest, 58% of this is in India, China, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Uzbekistan, but then you also have the Republic of the Congo, and then you have the Middle East. So they're all exploiting it, so shouldn't you pay attention then to the clothes you wear, where they're made? Was it fair trade or was it exploited? Did someone have to suffer for you to make that, buy that, eat that? Visit it. So I just think that it's a wake-up call that we have to, with intent, know more about what we're participating in so we don't inadvertently support something that was produced through slavery. And I thought you would find this important because this is from Sarah Lazar from Aldernet. As you know, if you listen regularly, I gave some suggestions to helping to end or at least reduce substantially terrorism. And the very first suggestion I said was, we know with absolute total proof that Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and different countries in there, and Kuwait, Qatar, Turkey, Jordan are all engaged in some form of support for terrorists, and as well as Afghanistan and Iraq. This is not a secret. Yet we continue to give enormous amounts of trade, including $200 billion in weapons over the last 7 years, most of them going to Saudi Arabia. And then they can be used any way they want, including sold on the black market or supporting their own particular in-country terrorists that they want to have in Syria, in Libya, or anywhere else to do their bidding. Proxy wars, regime change. Saudi Arabia wants Wahhabism and Sharia to be the theocracy of the entire Middle East, and it'll do anything to get there, and it has. So doesn't it just make common sense you stop doing business until they go after all the terrorists and they handle all their terrorism? Now, if the Middle East went after all their terrorists, then you would see an enormous stopping of terrorists because they would disrupt all their chains of command, they would disrupt all their funding, they wouldn't train them, wouldn't give them safe haven, wouldn't have hospitals for them when they get injured. That would stop it. They also would stop the oil that's being stolen out of Iraq and Syria and then brought into Turkey, and then those funds, upwards of $3 to $4 million a day, that keeps funding them. And a lot of the weapons also that they get from the United States, they then give to them. So the idea that you're going to reduce the number of terrorists by killing some of their leaders is a myth. That you can bomb them all is a myth, because all you're going to do is just completely destroy everything there. And the fact that we say we only killed about 129 civilians, the real report shows we killed over 1,400. Or put it another way, We end up 90% of the deaths in any drone strike are civilians, not enemy combatants. So stop all this. Stop supplying with weapons. Stop being a culture of death and destruction. Stop honoring and praising violence. And that way, and also allow Saudi Arabia and other countries to bring the immigrants into their countries. You won't find them there. You're not told that. Those immigrants are not going to Saudi Arabia. They're not going to these other countries. They're going to Europe. But there's another big thorn here. And according to Sarah Lazar, it's imperialism Obama style. 800 military bases around the world. Quote, speaking at the Aspen Idea Festivals on June 28th, Secretary of State John Kerry sought to ease anxiety over an ever-rising global turmoil and strife by pointing out to an eyebrow-raising fact, quote, I state unabashedly to every single one of you, the United States of America is more engaged in more places with greater impact today than in any time in American history. And that is simply documentable and undeniable, end quote. That was John Kerry. So Kerry made it clear that when he talks about engagement, war is a key part of the equation. Quote, we've been working with countries to support a new government of national accord in Libya. And he referenced the dubious state that the U.S. is moving to heavily arm. Quote, I was recently in the United Arab Emirates, and I think we've come to a common understanding of how to strengthen the government and go after the terrorists in Libya. Hold on. We created the terrorists in Libya. There were no terrorists in Libya when Gaddafi had the richest nation in Africa, the best educated citizens in Africa, the most prosperous citizens in all of Africa, 54 nations in Africa. They were the most prosperous, the most rights of any women in Africa and the entire Middle East was in Libya. You can say anything you want about Gaddafi and his ego and everything, but show me another country in Africa or the Middle East that did more for their people and women than Gaddafi. And yet we destroyed Gaddafi, his country, killed over 28,000 of his citizens who are not terrorists, and now it's a hotbed for terrorism. So then that justifies again in their mindset, well, now we have to have our own military bases in Libya and exploit their oil. So isn't it time that we just closed up all those bases, got out of all those countries? Yeah, that'd be another way to help. And also, on a separate issue, I just find that when we're looking at fascism and we're looking at those who support this neoliberal agenda, these are fascists who are making up the stories, the talking points, who run the corporations. For example, a new study quantifies U.S. fascism. Here's what you didn't know. Nearly half of all retired Congress members become lobbyists. And this is from J. Activist Post, quote, as a member of the U.S. Congress, one can expect to earn a substantial income of $174,000 per year, a very comfortable sum to live on. But it doesn't stop there. Now legislators are frequently using their political careers as a stepping stone to a much larger payday upon retirement, often getting five times that income, meaning close to $1 million, as an industry lobbyist. Three political scientists have tracked data all the way back to 1976 to analyze the lobbying activity of former members of Congress in an eye-opening study. The results of the study, quote, who walks through the revolving door examining the lobbying activity of former members of Congress appears in the journal Interest Groups and Advocacy makes it clear that there has been a substantial increase in the number of members becoming lobbyists after retirement. Okay, then how does it work? What works this way? You go to a K Street lobbying firm. You tell them you sit on appropriations committee or finance committee or health care committee. And next thing you know, you get a big bonus for signing. You get any car you want. You get a lease on it. They pay for it. You get a beautiful stipend for living. You get a credit card, unlimited purchases. But in return, you have to go back in that place where you once worked, and you have to convince them that you have a company that's got something that they should give a contract to and that will never end. The contracts in Washington never end. They're done in perpetuity. So it's just like a growing metastasized cancer that keeps feeding off the American people with no accountability. The redundancy, the fraud, the graft, the corruption, it's endemic in our current system. So those are the people who will do any deal. They'll do the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They'll do GATT, NAFTA. They'll do arms deals because they're connected to it. And there's about 200,000 people working in that system. And that's who controls Washington. So, and to add to that, last week I mentioned about I felt Cornel West should understand that being selected by Bernie Sanders to be on the Democratic National Party platform doesn't mean a diddly thing. Why? Because it's non-binding, and it'll be there just for show, even though he is sincere. And they went ahead and said, yes, they're going to work on the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other things that they, when they're on the trail, they say, no, they won't. And they're not going to allow universal health care, etc. But why? Here's what we found out through TruthDig's research. The leading Democratic presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, and the DNC chairwoman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Florida, appointed professional influence peddlers with ties to weapons makers, hedge funds, and Walmart to the committee responsible for drafting the Democratic Party platform. And no one talked about these people. For example, Wendy Sherman and Carol Browner, two of the representatives chosen by Hillary Clinton, work at the Albright Stonebridge Group, a government affairs firm that was created in 2009 through a merger with Madeleine Albright. Remember her? The woman who said 500,000 dead Iraqi children was acceptable on 60 Minutes, and who was there when they were bombing Serbia. Yeah, that's the same one. And then you have the Stonebridge. And who's Stonebridge? That's a defense contractor lobbying shop. The website for the company touts its ability to win favors and influence with government officials throughout the world on behalf of corporate clients, from shaping regulatory standards in the U.S. for European automotive business to engaging in, quote, the highest level of Saudi government. Oh, you mean dealing with terrorist organizations that destroy women, that'll stone them to death, that hate gays, and will crucify gay. So exactly how do you march in a gay parade at the same time you accept tens of millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia and you accept lecture fees and your husband accepts lecture fees from Saudi Arabia? I want to understand how you do that and the gay community lets you get away with it. You should have been shamed out of that parade. You're no friend of the gays. None. But you are friends with Saudi Arabia, and they kill gays. Explain that to me so I can understand it. Did I miss something this morning? And that's the Clintons. And by the way, the latest is, I just saw on the BBC, that the FBI has decided not to bring charges against her. So we're going to get you a background on Hillary Clinton starting tomorrow that you've never heard before, ever. I think you'll find it interesting. And because when you're as powerful as the Clintons or the Obamas in Washington, you can stop anything. You bet you can. So that is more to think about. Now, the other thing I'd like for you to call in about is Haiti, because this concerns me. This is from Bill Quigley, and here's what is in Alternate. They took a look at the 9 million people looking in Haiti. And we all remember the earthquake of January 12, 2010, where hundreds of thousands were killed and many more wounded. And then later, thousands upon tens of thousands died because of cholera. UN never took responsibility, though it was proven that the cholera came from soldiers, UN soldiers, that contaminated the water. And yet we heard about how much money was being raised. And there was Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and Bush raising money. Yeah, billions raised. But how much actually went to Haiti? Because if you went back to Haiti today, you would say, I thought they spent $9 billion rebuilding the whole country. No. One, the largest single recipient of U.S. earthquake money for Haiti was the United States government. And that was also true for all other countries. How's that possible? Simple. The U.S. allocated $379 million in aid and sent 5,000 troops. So when they sent those troops, we, the American public, paid thinking it would go to Haitian citizens to rebuild. It went to pay for those troops. And that was just one. And they have all kinds of situations for that. The money also went to the U.N. World Food Program, but the food didn't go to Haiti, and the Pan Am Health Organization and Save the Children. The overall $1.6 billion allocated for relief by the U.S. was spent and this is according to U.S. Congressional Research Office, $655 million was reimbursed to the Department of Defense, $220 million reimbursed to the Department of Health and Human Services, and then they gave grants with Haitian money. They gave grants to U.S. individual states to cover Haitian evacuees. Didn't happen. and USA Disaster Assistance, $350 million, $150 million to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Exactly how did you help Haiti? And $15 million to the Department of Homeland Security. And how did that help Haiti? It's just all fraud. Fact. Only 1%, 1% of all the money raised went to the Haitian government. That's less than a penny out of each dollar of U.S. aid went to the government of Haiti. And that was also true for all the other international donors. Why? Well, because they didn't want to give it to the Haitian people, and they sure didn't give it to the Haitian companies or the Haitian nonprofit organizations that actually could have helped them. In fact, when you looked at 1,490 contracts awarded by the U.S. government to the relief that would be, you know, used to build new living structures and water systems and electricity, they only allowed 23 contracts to go to Haitian companies. 23 out of 1,490. And they gave $194 million to American contractors and $4.8 million to Haitian contractors. In fact, they actually didn't allow Haitian representatives into the meetings in Haiti to talk about how you can help them. And all the money went to international aid agencies and big, well-connected non-government organizations, the NGOs. The American Red Cross received $486 million, and they built six little homes with it. Those six homes probably, I'm guessing, would have cost about $10,000 to $15,000 each. So let me see. On the one side, you get almost $500 million, and you spend what, $50,000, $60,000? That's a nice hat trick. And yet, why aren't they called out? And that's just the beginning of it. So what it is, it's big business. Disasters are profitable, and there are companies that got in there, and they bring in their lobbyist. One of those lobbyists was a former NATO commander, Wesley Clark, and he then associates with another person, and suddenly deals are made. And Bill Clinton, he's the biggest one out there. So just understand, if you're from Haiti, know people in Haiti, and you wonder why nothing's been done except for private groups, it's because you just have to follow the power money trail. That's how it works. Everywhere you look, you find, according to Susan George, you find masses and droves and gangs of unelected, unaccountable, profit-oriented individuals and corporations, new institutions, and they're surfacing everywhere. And they are making official policy. I didn't give them the right to think for me and vote for me, did you? When you hear about Davos and you get this group of unelected, mainly people from banks and Wall Street, a sprinkling of celebrities, and they all show up there, and they decide the fate of the world. You know, they're the deep state. Who gave them a right to do that? Because what they come away with becomes the order of the day. And everywhere you look, this is going on. We're a select group of individuals, and they tend to have some things in common. Their children like to go to the same private schools, and they hang out in the same locales. They vacation together. Sometimes they do business together. It's like an inbred group that when you get in, you want to stay in because you have all the prestige of being the inside. And I think it's time that we call these people out and boycotted them and their companies and everything that we have to do with them. And these are the people who get the $200 billion in contracts for the arms. These are the people who make all the deals. And it's just not right. Your input on TalkBack, Power of the Unelected, the Haitian and any other disaster in the world, you're going to have all these same characters jumping up, running out, raising money, but it never goes to help the people. And I believe we should boycott the Red Cross. We should boycott all of these NGOs. They're worthless, self-serving parasites. Call them for what they are. That's my thought. What are yours? 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please. Oh, before we go, I'm hearing all these clowns on Fox. My God, it's an embarrassment to listen to them. But I want to see what they're thinking. And they're talking about patriotism. You'd think a patriot was someone who'd get a gun, go out and say, show me someone of a dark skin so I can shoot him. Show me someone who's a Muslim. I'll, you know, beat him up. I'm not going to question my Defense Department. I'm not going to question the budget. I'll only question if you give money to poor people. That I'm going to question because I'm a real patriot. But if you give, you know, 10 times, 1,000 times more money to big corporations, you make sure they don't pay any taxes. You know, I'm a patriot. No, you're not a patriot. But here's someone who will tell you what a patriot is.
Patriotism. There's a word thrown around a lot. It inspires passionate debate and is worn like a badge of honor, and with good reason. Because it means love and devotion for one's country. Love. For a word designed to unite, it can also be pretty divisive. You see, there's more to patriotism than flag sequins, onesies, and rodeos, and quadruple cheeseburgers. Patriotism is love for a country, not just pride in it. But what really makes up this country of ours? What is it we love? It's more than just a huge rock full of animals like cougars and eagles, right? It's the people. Do me a favor. Close your eyes for a second. I want to try something out. Picture the average U.S. citizen. Think about it. How old are they? What's their hair like? How much can they bench? You got one? Okay. So chances are, the person you're picturing right now looks a little different than the real average American. There are 319 million U.S. citizens. 51% are female. So first off, the average American is a woman. Cool, huh? Is that what you pictured? 54 million are Latino. 40 million senior citizens. 27 million are disabled, 18 million are Asian. That's more people in the U.S. than play football and baseball combined. 9 million are lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, more than the entire amount of people that live in the state of Virginia. Around 10 million are redhead, 5.1 million play ultimate frisbee, and 3.5 million are Muslim. Triple the number of people currently serving in the United States military. Almost half the country belongs to minority groups. People who are lesbian, African-American, and bi, and transgender, and Native American, and proud of it. We know that labels don't devalue us, they help define us, keeping us dialed into our cultures and our beliefs and who we are as Americans. After all, what's more American than freedom to celebrate the things that make us, us? I mean, it's stitched into the stars and stripes of this country, from the Constitution to Gettysburg, to our motto, E Pluribus Unum, from many, one. It's even in our country's name, the United States. This year, patriotism shouldn't just be about pride of country. It should be about love. Love beyond age, disability, sexuality, race, religion, and any other labels. Because the second any of us judge people based on those labels, we're not really being patriotic, are we? So let's try this one more time. Close your eyes. Picture the average Joe or Joan or Juan or Jean-Luc. The real people will make America, America. And this year, whenever you feel the urge to don those star-spangled shorts, set off fireworks the size of my biceps to show love for our country, remember that to love America is to love all Americans. Because love has no labels.
And that was John Cena. Now, let's say hello to Stephen from Queens. Hi, Stephen. Your turn. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi, Gary. Thank you for allowing me to call in and voice some of the, or echo some of the things and corroborate what I've seen in Haiti over the last 6 years. I do chiropractic mission work. We have an orphanage there in Wanamance, Haiti, which is, I believe, similar to a lot of Haiti. It's not one of the poorest areas. But there are no areas that are not poor. But just to tell you what I saw about the Clinton factory, and some I could tell you for sure is fact, because I've seen it. I've seen people's paychecks that come from the Clinton factory. Some of it I've read in the media about a minimum wage increase that Hillary killed while she was Secretary of State for Haitians. Now, let me tell you what I do know, I drive by their factory. I believe they make Hanes and Levi's shoes their textile industry. They pay about 30 cents an hour for a 40-hour work week. They walk home, I guess, with about $40 or $30, whatever it is, per week. They're not very well liked by the Haitian people. There's another factory called Devi, which is owned by the Dominicans, which pays slightly less. But slavery has not ended in Haiti, and unfortunately, it's the Clintons that are perpetuating this happening.
I appreciate, Stephen, your call, and what we'll do is leave your phone number with our engineer, and we'll have you on for a longer segment to tell us what you've seen firsthand from your living in Haiti for the past 5 or 6 years. That we would appreciate. Thank you, Stephen. We'll take one last call here from Johnson from Brooklyn. Hi, Johnson.
Dr. Noll, thank you for taking the call. This is a gentleman in Brooklyn. I have a 20-year-old solar house. I was over 12 years in the military. I'm getting no help from government for reducing taxes. They just ignore everything that they've gotten in the mail again and again and again. And it's gotten to a point where when you ask what's going on with them, that's the reality is that they are emotionally perturbed when you can't get even responses to your certified letters that you mail. And so it's a game that's going on. This is a delusional democracy. What we do have are people, as you keep talking about it, with what's going on in government. We're losing it. We've lost it. We're losing it. We've already lost it. And I could end up spending hours talking with you. I've got loads of things in my home that I would be only too happy to contribute. And you could end up passing on and enjoying what when I'm dead I can't use anymore. Well, and it's not sad.
It is sad, and I'm sorry that you've suffered for this after serving your country, but you're not alone. I could have almost every veteran give you a horror story. And I'll give you my insight why so many people, including veterans, are committing suicide and other groups are. But there is hope, and I'll give you the hope of what we can do to take back our country on tomorrow's program. I have a commentary on that very subject. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.